excuse me, just
can,
one
can
second.
Can I ask a
yeah.
question?
Yes.
And again, I think it's maybe more of a question of Amy. If we were to, let me give a little bit of why I'm saying this. I came in thinking that we should incorporate the Eastbrook ordinances. And having sat here for this period of time, it seems to me that the applicant's charge was to meet the DEP requirements. So in order, so I'm now kind of shifting back again, thinking they did what they've been asked to do. Can we, in the permit, because of a desire to want to acknowledge and value the work that Eastbrook has done and the implications of the Eastbrook findings, particularly on these limited residences, can we, through the reporting process, reserve the option to go back and ask the applicant at the end of 2 years, or 1 year, if it seems wildly dissonant from what these estimates are of noise levels, to make some modification so to bring DEP and Eastbrook more compatibly together? I didn't say that well, but you know what I mean. Can we ask them to go back and make an adjustment to their operation to be closer in compliance with Eastbrook without initially granting Eastbrook higher authority than the DEP, which is what the applicant has been required or asked to do?
So I think you have to start with what is the standard that you are applying. And the standard, the legal standard you're applying is that you're right, it's the applicant's burden to demonstrate that there's not an undue adverse impact on existing uses. So we're talking about the impact of noise. So that's your Title 12 standard. In this type of project, you are also directed to the DEP noise rules. So you take that, you apply those rules in making your statutory determination. So you look to the DEP rules to figure out whether or not the impact is undue. So then you turn to the rules, and what DEP rules provide you are with particular standards, and it also directs you to consider, that you may consider, a local ordinance that it has been adopted and abuts the project. The DEP rules do not tell you exactly what that means. You get to decide how you consider them. You do, however, have to, in making a decision on this permit, you have to decide whether or not your statutory standard has been met. And again, that standard is whether or not there'll be an undue adverse impact.
Right. And if it is the determination of this body that there is not an undue adverse impact, but there's no turbine there now. So as these turbines are built and become operational, it becomes apparent that the initial estimates were perhaps not as low, I mean, were not accurate. Can we go back to them in 2 years and say, wow, we now see that through this 2 years of monitoring that the estimates that we looked at in August of 2011 are no longer, it didn't happen. Not anybody's fault, not whatever. And we would like you to now meet the Eastbrook standard.
Well, you're in making a decision, you're deciding what the standard is.
Right now.
Legal standard is and what the noise level is in order to meet that. What the DBA value is that has to be met in order to demonstrate that it's not going to be an undue adverse impact. I think that's part of your question. I think the other part of your question is a standard permitting condition that requires applicants, permittees to monitor and demonstrate that indeed they are meeting the applicable standard. And if, as it turns out, a project, their modeling was inaccurate, then yes, they would be in violation of the permit, and that would have to be dealt with.
So without need to do anything else. I mean, the, okay, I got you.
I would like to just interject for just one moment because Commissioner Hammond asked me. I pointed you to Table 23. I think you should pull 13 out at the same time. If you have those two together, we can go through it, I think, readily. That would be, you've got page 13, comparison of the key provisions. That's the best place to see the see everything side by side. And then on the page 23 was analysis in terms of quantifiable, which is one of the tests that is available to you through the DEP rules. But I think the best table to look at right now is 13.
Don, just sure. Quickly, yep. The ordinance, the Eastbrook ordinance requires a public hearing. Was a public hearing conducted by the planning board regarding this project? A public hearing, not a public meeting, but a public hearing in conformity with this ordinance?
Well, I'm not sure I understood you. At first, I thought you were asking, was a public hearing done for the facility ordinance? But what you're really asking me, did they conduct a public hearing for this project?
Yes, according to this ordinance, it requires a public hearing. Was that public hearing conducted? Did the applicant attend and present at a public hearing? What I'm trying to get at here is the question about whether or not the ordinance was in effect, and did the applicant comply with the provisions of the ordinance, at least the process provisions, in terms of the public hearing? I just want to know if the...
Well, I'll just jump in for 1 second. So this is, it wasn't, you know, their ordinance, a local ordinance would apply to their own proceeding.
Right.
And so you can consider their provisions, but the hearing that in this proceeding was your hearing.
I understand that, okay. What I'm trying to determine is whether or not the question that Sally has is it fair to hold the applicant to the Eastbrook standard if they were only required to comply with the DEP standard. And I just want to know, to what extent was the applicant aware of that standard, to the extent that did they, in fact, was there a public hearing, and did they present testimony regarding this project as required by this ordinance? That was kind of what I'm trying to...
The only... I can answer that to some extent, and this... I can't answer specifically the public hearing question, but I can... answer that because it was readily available in the media. It was in the letters from that were submitted and emails submitted by the public from particularly from the Eastbrook area, that particularly Dave Fowler of First Wind, the project manager for this for the applicant, attended meetings throughout the year in Eastbrook. They did advise at different times, suggest different things. One of the letters said, well, they didn't really go along with the sound levels, but I can't specifically answer, did they put testimony at a public hearing on the facility ordinance? The applicability of the ordinance,
is in question.
Town ordinance, right in the very beginning, says you got to be in Eastbrook. Yeah. You know, excuse me, you have to be in the town for it to apply.
Okay.
Is that fair to say, Amy?
Yeah. I see.
Yeah. Okay, if we can move through page 13. And it's just to sum up what we've been talking about here, measurement location. You see the DEP, 500 feet from the residence, Eastbrook 660. They're the same as far as the project boundary limit. That's the 75 dBA, cannot exceed. Those are the same. The daytime limits and the nighttime limits, they're right there before you to see those. It's a 5 dBA more restrictive difference in Eastbrook. We did discuss that the protected locations to the modeling, 3 of the measurements fully conform, and 1 is slightly non-conforming, but the applicant felt that it was in the modeling buffer. That can obviously be good. The suggestions here of frequency of reporting will verify that. The SDRS, that's what I was referring to. It has to go to the planning board and in Eastbrook when their events occur, but both consultants say those are unlikely. Tonal is the same. The tonal in Eastbrook is more restrictive. So both of those are more restrictive in Eastbrook. Construction noise, that's why I want to make sure this got sorted out. A period, it was taken out by statute, it was taken out of the DEP rules. If you go on the webpage and you read the rules, you'll see some daytime construction limits. But you, if, when you actually chase the statute down, they just deal with the non-daylight hours. These get added in Eastbrook. And that would bring into considerations of reporting, enforcement, monitoring during the construction period. The two-mile standard is something that's in the Eastbrook ordinance. And I pointed out the reporting requirements. There's really, it's just typical with the DEP at 1 year, but that's more frequent than the other. So.
It seems to me that what we're trying to do here is we're trying to provide some protection for P1 and P2. We're trying to give certain real legitimacy and cognizance to the efforts of the people of town Eastbrook who came forward to develop this ordinance. But we're also a little bit concerned about establishing the general precedent of adopting any municipal ordinance, irrespective of its content. We began this by saying that, I forget the terminology that's applied, we may take cognizance.
It's not may, it's will.
We will.
Yeah, okay. It is.
So therefore,
we'll consider.
We're about to pick and choose, in a sense, from this ordinance. It would seem to me if we did that in this case, it would not necessarily establish a precedent. The only precedent it would establish is that with future ordinances, we will pick and choose. So therefore, I would suggest that we pick and choose. For example, if in fact there is, with regard to the property, the residence versus the property line, okay? I think if we could do that and say, given the fact that, to punt on this, say the modeling indicates that the modeling error, it is within modeling error, that the project will meet either standard within the modeling error. Obviously, that presents a little bit of liability to the applicant. And we say, okay, over the first couple of years, we monitor and see where that leads us. That should provide protection for P1 and P2 without deciding forever and in all cases whether we the property line or the residence. The other thing is, if we look at these, it seems to me that because in most instances, the ordinance and the DEP regulations are met, irrespective of different values. So, but I think that one of the things we're looking at daytime construction. Is that correct? Which is a difference between the two?
That's correct.
Okay. I don't have anything about that, but I mean, people may. The other is the double penalty, the 5 dBL penalty, which I'd like to hear a little bit more about. And the testing regime, which we might, again, go back to the idea of protection for P1, P2 at the boundary of the residence. I'm trying to fashion a solution here.
Can I just clarify one thing? So I just want to clarify that the choice regarding the measurement location is DEP is 500 feet from the residence or the parcel boundary, whichever is less. Eastbrook is you go to the parcel boundary and then you go 660 feet beyond the parcel boundary. So we're not talking about around the residence or parcel boundary necessarily. We're talking about beyond. And so I wasn't clear from the way you phrased it whether that your initial suggestion was using the Eastbrook standard or the DEP standard. I know it's just starting a conversation.
It was just an initial thought.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm, you can refine that any way you think is appropriate. What I'm getting at here is it seems to me that the DEP standard and the Eastbrook standard may, in fact, be met by this project, irrespective of which one is applied. The slight difference between the two, based on modeling, may be resolved by monitoring. so that there is, in fact, no conflict. I'm just as a practical solution, maybe that's the best way to move forward. It gives protection to P1 and P2, provides, it seems to me, real respect, which I think we need to accord to the town of Eastbrook, and also allows the project to move forward without establishing extraordinary precedents for the future. So, and if I'm wrong in any of that, it's just I'm just thinking.
Well, and let me just clarify so I make sure I understand. And Amy, I'd appreciate your take on this as well.
I'm done.
So the suggestion is that because the modeling shows a small that the impact at the Eastbrook boundary, the 660 feet from the parcel boundary for one of the residences, the measurement would be slightly higher, but that because of the measurement error, that's likely to not occur, that we could say that that would be not an undue adverse impact. And I just, so I'm trying to understand.
As I stated in response to Sally's question earlier, I think the commission has to be clear what the standard is. So the standard is has to be one or the other. So setting that issue aside, I think Ed's other comment was that in this case, it appears that what the record shows is that this project comes close within the margin of error to the Eastbrook ordinance.
Just to weigh in, I think the fact that we have discussed this for an hour suggests that we have given some serious consideration to the Eastbrook ordinance. I think our obligation, and I might add, I think the obligation of the applicant has met the requirement. I personally don't see, with the information presented to me, an undue adverse impact. And I think we use the DEP with the acknowledgement that in 99% of the requirements, both conditions will be met. And I think at the end of monitoring, if we find that that was wrong, then it becomes an enforcement issue that can be satisfied by enforcing the fact that they didn't meet the DEP guidance. But I just think to start picking and choosing is to invite enormous complications for this applicant, for residents, for LURC, and for all future applicants. I think we have to, I'm inclined to say the DEP ought to be the standard, and they've met it as far as we know. And when they don't, then we'll talk to them.
Gwen, I'm going to just really briefly answer one thing that I was asked to do, Commissioner Laverty, and the Eastbrook ordinance, which is at the back of the section, page 31, which is in Appendix B at the top, you'll find about the planning board's involvement in the second edition of a second on the repetitive sound penalty.
Just to explain, see, I had a sort of visual reaction. Being, first of all, in the interest of full disclosure, I'm a selectman, okay? So I've been on a planning board. I spent 20 years on a planning board, and many years as a selectman. To say that an action of the planning board it should not be considered because it's non-quantifiable, that was the only thing I was reacting to. Why?
Okay.
Please explain to me why an action of the planning board, again, we're making a decision based on these numbers. That could easily be argued because we're lay people is non-quantifiable. I mean, please explain that to me.
Yes, I will. And it was advanced by both our consultant, but not in paragraphs, but a statement was right there. and also the applicant. But I have just, it's right here. It's easy to read it. When a short duration repetitive sound, 5 dBA must be added to the observed measurement of the SDRS that results from routine operation of the facility for the purposes of determining compliance with the above sound limits. That's at the protected locations. For short, and then it goes on to say, for short SDRS sounds which the planning board determines are particularly annoying or pose a threat to the health and welfare of other persons due to their character or duration, a second 5 dBA increment must be added to the observed levels of the short duration repetitive sounds that the result from routine operation of facility for the purposes of determining compliance with the above sound limits. And the maximum sound level of the SDRS sounds shall not exceed the following limits. 660 feet, within 660 feet of any protected location, 55 dBA at any time of the day or night. That's where, that's all I can really put you to.
So like no adverse impact.
So, have we given you clear direction? I'm not sure that we
have. I'm not sure.
Here's what I think.
Yes, I feel I've gotten a lot of direction.
A lot of direction.
But I'm not sure if it's... No, I really do. I think I understand all the concerns and can craft.
And I know, yeah. I'm not... I mean, I like what everything that I've heard here, the commissioners have said. I do like the approach that Sally takes, just because it keeps things very clean and straightforward. What I wonder is if there isn't some path in between, actually going down and choosing, picking and choosing, and the DEP. And that would involve, I think, perhaps some sort of, acknowledgement that we're going to utilize the DEP standards, and then maybe a condition that... special consideration be given for these two structures, a little more testing. I don't know whether I'd go as far. The one limit that I kind of jumped out at me is this nighttime hour limit, because apparently the project meets the DEP standard but slightly above the Eastbrook standard for one turbine, one location. I mean, that, and I realize this is modeling and...
Yes, and that's on the P1 parcel of Donahoe, and yep. Yes, yes. If they use the DEP level, it would be met at the lower level.
No,
I'm sorry.
Tell me if I'm wrong, that if you use the measurement location from the DEP standard, which is the 500 feet from the residence or the parcel boundary, whichever is less, and you also look at the Eastbrook DBA limits, hourly limits, that the project meets the standards.
For nighttime?
Right.
Okay, nighttime.
Nighttime on that level, nighttime on that parcel is...
Is that the one that's 41.5?
Yes,
versus
that's
40?
I was looking.
So it's 1.5 decibel,
yes,
difference.
And I was trying to correct myself from earlier when I said a fraction of a decibel. I apologize for that. I was trying to do everything, and I don't have my computer here. It's 1.5, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe the best approach is just to monitor maybe more closely adherence to the DEP standards for those two structures. And I'm not sure exactly what that would look like, but I'm sure you folks could come up with some sort of wording.
Yes.
Does that make any sense at all?
I'll take any guidance right here, but what I would like to say is some of these, as we get to the later ones, we've made staff recommendations, but on here we came forward without one. But I feel staff could be confident in making a recommendation if directed to do so in some particular proper manner.
With a handshake, deal, for, as a good neighbor, that the applicant would want to make sure that the noise levels are for those two residents equal the Eastbrook ordinance just on their own. I, for one, would be satisfied with a verbal agreement or just say we will work with them and then monitor. I don't know. I mean, it doesn't have to be in writing, I would hope. A lot of people say it would, it should, but it's so close to being where it needs to be that it shouldn't be a problem. I don't know. A neighborly main thing to do.
Maybe that's a sign from God. It is so unlike me, but I want to quote Ronald Reagan, and I would want to trust but verify. Because we don't know that these estimates are correct to begin with. You know, they're all just estimates. So if they're way out of line and these poor people in those residences are having awful noise, I think we need to be sure to go, you know. So.
Is that the way we're going to go with that one?
We could.
Toby?
Yeah, just going back to page 13, when you read reporting requirements, it says typically 1 year testing according to LURC. This has nothing to do with the DEP. Mm-hmm. So it's according to us?
Well, he's
talking about
down there.
Yes, do you want to?
Sure. I think, you know, what we've done in the past is worked with Warren Brown, who's our consultant for sound issues, and the testing protocols have been evolving, but they are to some degree common between DEP and LURC, and then whatever specific conditions needed to be crafted particular to the situation were added. So it's based on our conditions of approval, which are typically based on DEP standards, but then modified as necessary to meet the particular circumstances. So it's just it's maintaining that common understanding with a common consultant between the two agencies.
I understand. And so, what is the DEP requirement on this, or do they vary it from?
I can look into that specifically, but this typical one year thing has been both DEP wind projects and LURC approved. We put LURC approved because that was, you know, before us here. There's also, they vary per the conditions of approval per project, and also there's different protocols in place for mitigation. If there's a sound violation, then there's protocols in place for mitigation. To cut throttle back, or that's not an accurate term, but you know, things that can be done. Yeah.
Thank you.
We possibly, it sounds like from the, we could craft several options that, you know, two options that pull this all together if you would like, or one that pulls it together.
Why don't we try a straw poll here to, or Ed, do you want to say something?
I just want to say I can understand the idea of make it clean and efficient to go just with the DEP standard. However, I think it would be a major mistake for us to reject any consideration of a municipal or local ordinance, because after all, there has been a model ordinance developed by the State Planning Office for adoption at the local level. I think that to say somehow that we are not going to do that would not be, I have a particular governance position with regard to that. I think that municipalities do have the authority to develop ordinances as long as they are at least as rigid and do not in any way are not exclusionary or confiscatory or whatever the third legal standard is. So I think the extent to which we can utilize the municipal ordinance, I think we're well advised to do so. That's all I will say.
So would for example, applying the daytime hour and the nighttime hour DBA, would that be sort of what you might have in mind?
Sure. Though, with, I mean, what is it going to,
as conditions?
Quite frankly, I'll say it publicly, what is it going to cost us? Were they applied here, where we do this on a selective case-by-case basis,
right?
Where we, in this instance, where there is no difference in terms of the practical implications for the project, and now we've even talked about maybe some little more extensive monitoring, why not even adopt maybe perhaps that provision? I mean, it just seems to me that it would be very politic to do that. It would be polite to do that. It would be, you know, acknowledging the efforts. I mean, my gosh. To get people to even serve on local planning boards.
As we all know, yeah. So do you are those the two that you would – I mean, those are the two that I singled out as maybe ones that I would
– I leave it to others to determine that. I mean, I don't want to get into anything about that. But I think that the extent to which we can acknowledge – and incorporate the local ordinance, I think we should.
Just a question, how long is the construction period for this project? Since if we're talking, you know, the thinking about construction noise, I mean, what is the period of time?
I'm going to say up to a year would be the best way to put it. It probably is very weather. I mean, when you read the schedule and everything,
yeah, and we
which
don't
I can
have
go to and find for you, but it's up to a year.
And we don't have in our standards anywhere that there's a noise is limited during between the hours, you know, during nighttime hours. They are, aren't they?
Our standards. Yeah.
And that's just for P1 and
okay.
P2.
Okay,
right?
Okay, so that's okay. If that's I'm fine with that.
Yeah, the DEP rules give us, you know, construction during daylight hours is not regulated, but in the evening it is.
Okay, all right,
yeah.
Fine. I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
Okay.
They did advance in their application some of the types of noise that is created during the day, like if they had to crush on site and had a crusher, 80 feet from the crusher would, I can't remember exactly, but I'm going to think it's like a certain DBA from so many feet from the crusher, and there are federal rules in that way.
I don't think we need to talk about daytime construction standards.
That's what I'm just trying to cross that off the
list.
But
I think there are, but there are other ones that we might look at. I think I'm willing to accept that the 5 dB, whatever it is, penalty. Let's not do that, but let's do the where there is compliance under both, we should at least acknowledge the local ordinance. And I think, well, I'd even go a little bit further than that, but with regard to the, never mind, that's enough. I've said enough on that.
Okay.
This only affects P1 and P2, right?
Pardon? Yeah.
Okay. Right.
Because I'm pretty sure that the people in Eastbrook will be monitoring that themselves anyway. I mean, we can sit here, but being a municipal official myself, I'm sure that somebody's going to be monitoring.
That's right.
All right. Definitely.
Does that give you enough to
work
with?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
Yep.
Good. It's 1:15, and I think we should take a break for lunch. And I guess we'll be back here in an hour. So that would be 1:45, and pick up where we left off, which I think is wildlife.
Wildlife and decommissioning are the ones that are analysis and decision, and the last two are stormwater and tangible benefits, which are staff recommendation.
Okay.
And they get less slides.
Which is hopefully, yes.
Yes.
Okay, good. Thank you. We'll be back here at 1:45.